The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention? We're on the eve of destruction. And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
Yeah, I think it'll work out. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Tuesday, the day after. I tell you, the Joe Beaver Show curse is the opposite. It's the Joe Beaver Show plus. Kennedy Schuller comes on a Friday, and then Saturday afternoon has the best game of her career, perhaps. Great statistical game. And then we have Travis Demers on, and we talked Trailblazers yesterday, and then they go and win again. They won again last night, and they'll play again tonight. And you can hear that over on 1340 Clue AM. Well, good morning, John Warren with Mike Parker and the Joe Beaver Show coming up on the show today at 12:05. I know the last couple of days I've been saying 11:30, and I don't know why that got into my head, because it's 12:05 that Aaron Fitt from D1Baseball.com will be joining us, and for some reason I had 11:30 in the mind. But I checked with Aaron about an hour ago, asking if he's still good to go, and he is. So we'll talk to the main writer and the main man from D1Baseball.com. Now, I'm not going to say anything when Aaron's on, but I subscribe to D1 Baseball, and it's my issue. I just don't understand, and I cannot get it to work. I can't get things to open up unless there's a second or third tier that you're supposed to be in to be able to see things on, you know, certain previews, top stories like top 50. Shortstops, top 50 third baseman, all of that I was trying to access and I couldn't. I just couldn't figure it out. So I'll ask him off the air. I don't think he deals with it. I think Kendall Rogers does, actually. They have great writers, though. They have great writers at D1Baseball.com. Shotgun Spratling is back. He did a nice interview with Mitch Canham. Excuse me. Yeah, he did a really nice interview on a podcast with Mitch Canham that I only heard a couple of minutes of, because I discovered it at the end of all of my research, or at least research attempts. And so I'd like to go back and listen to that and see what Mitch has to say. And like I said, they have several great writers that cover the entire nation. So that's 12:05. Anything after that, Doc will have to tell us. And Doc is getting settled in. What do you think, Doctor?
I've been, as always, working phones, visiting with people, pushing to the edges and the margins of life, and thus getting here kind of in a rush. Speaking of rush, that was no pun intended, but here we go. I'm going to walk over here and get the book I set down. Are you a Rush fan?
Rush.
You like the band Rush?
I wouldn't buy their stuff, okay. But there's a couple of their songs that, I like them.
Okay, yeah. I got you.
Yeah,
I don't know a whole lot about them.
Well, I can tell you a few things just from learning from watching reaction videos. Neil Peart, he recently passed.
Yes, he did.
Greatest drummer of all time.
And a great lyricist.
Getty wrote most of it.
No, he's the lead vocalist.
There was a really good documentary on Rush that I fell asleep to something else and woke up to this documentary and stayed on it. It was years ago, and it was so thorough and so good that, you know, talking about them writing songs in restaurants on napkins and things like that. What is that? 72 Stories.
By Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee. The lead singer for Rush. They're Canadian, right?
Yes. Baseball, Ray.
Now,
baseball.
That's interesting to me. Anytime someone who reaches great heights in the entertainment industry, but they love baseball or some other
sport. Seems like REM's got a little bit of that going on, too. They did an album or a series of baseball songs. But I'm part of the reason I'm late is
Where'd you get that?
Well, the 72 stories, I'll make it 73 here real quick.
This is fantastic.
There's a book called 72 Stories, and it looks tremendous. But I sat down with a professor of nuclear engineering, as I always do, every morning on my way to work. Now, but Todd Palmer is a professor of nuclear engineering at Oregon State. He won a Distinguished Professor Award last year. Big Beaver fan, Knights fan, comes to ball games in the summer. It's where I kind of got to know him and through church and elsewhere over the years. Todd Palmer, his wife Camille, his kids Jackson and Abigail, have kind of seen them off and on in our great town and neighborhood through the years. But he has heard, he loves baseball. Rush is the ultimate influence in his life. Rush, the band Rush.
That's understandable.
We have Bruce Coburn's my guy. Yeah. I mean, we all have people, bands, musicians, whatever, that touch us at a fairly young age, and we stay with them for a lifetime. So when he heard us talking about Dylan recently, and Kip Carlson informed us that Dylan has this kind of thing for baseball, as we sort of happened upon last week while talking about A Complete Unknown. Todd says, Mike, I want to get together with you. I want to loan you a book, an autographed copy of this book that isn't even public yet. But because he is, in a sense, a season ticket holder, a subscriber and an insider on the Rush website and all of that.
Boy, that's beautiful.
It is a beautiful book. From the collection of Geddy Lee. And I don't know if anybody else out there knows of Rush. I like some of their stuff. It's a different kind of genre and style, but I like what I do hear and know.
Anybody in our age group, absolutely, they know Rush.
72 stories from the collection of Geddy Lee.
Wow.
And he has stories of base autographed baseballs and other baseball memorabilia. He grew up a huge Toronto Blue Jays. He grew up a Tigers fan, became a Blue Jays fan in Toronto. He is Canadian, as you say, but fell in love with baseball. He has autographs and collections from the likes of, and the Beatles make his list too, but it's mainly baseball. He's got Hank Aaron as his leadoff individual that he has an autographed baseball from. Here's Rogers Hornsby. And so there's 72 stories. There's an autograph from Rogers Hornsby. He's got Christy Mathewson. He has Japan 1931 and 1934 tours, which would have The Catcher Was a Spy, Mo Berg involved in that.
Oh, yeah.
He's got Ichiro. There's Randy Johnson, Walter Johnson, John F. Kennedy autographs. I mean, in fact, he's got an autograph from John F. Kennedy, opening day baseball, April 10th, 1961, signed by the president.
Does he have
Sandy Koufax? I mean,
either Babe or Howard.
Let's see if he's got. Let me see if he has Babe Ruth, because he does write about these alphabetically.
Yeah,
he's got Babe Ruth. He's got Nolan Ryan. He has Dave Steeb. my former teammate. He's got Ted Williams, Honus Wagner, Jackie.
Honus Wagner, that's
Robin Roberts, Mel Ott, Stan Musial. And stories about how he acquired, information about these guys and stories of how he acquired this incredible collection. I saw on YouTube, Dan Rather does an interview where he walks around with Geddy in Geddy's home. And Geddy's just showing him incredible collection of baseball stuff. Primarily.
Well, the cover on that is really
nice,
isn't
that really special?
That is amazing.
So anyway, Professor Palmer, Todd Palmer, loaned me a copy of this book. And he just recently received it. It gets out to the general public. The public sale for the book begins in May of 25, but he's got his hands on an early edition and is kind enough to loan it to me. Now, that's led me to listen a little bit more to Rush, but he gave me these, passed this book off this morning. So I'm finding that I'm looking forward to whatever the book holds in store.
Well, yeah, be careful.
Yeah, I know.
That's in great
it's
shape.
It's a beautiful book, isn't it?
And it's beautiful, yeah. But man, that would be great. That would be so fun to read those stories. I love baseball more for the romantic side of it than almost the actual game itself.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Movies, books, literature, stories.
Yeah.
When you said Mel Ott, I had to chuckle because the first thing that came to my mind was the actor, the young actor who they picked up on the side of the road in Field of Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take him to the field. He sees it and he goes, he sees all the play. He goes, Mel Ott. And I just,
I
just can't help but think of that.
Yeah.
And that whole movie was about the romanticization of the game. It had nothing about balls and strikes.
Not really, no. No, they don't deal much with whether to bunt or not to bunt or exit velo.
Only when he steps in as a rookie and the kid and the pitcher's blowing him back and he goes, oh, aren't you going to say anything?
Yeah.
Don't get hit, kid.
It's got a sweetness to it. The film culminates in a game of catch, and you can't go wrong with
it. Oh, what a scene.
I mean, it's well done.
Very well
done.
It
really is well done. Anyway, good morning, John.
Welcome home.
Speaking of baseball, we'll get into a little bit more of a contemporary vein with Aaron Fitt and talk about Gavin Turley and Trent Carraway and Ivar Arquette and Dax Whitney and Nelson Keljo and Joey Munt and others. How about on the range, Dax Whitney and Joey Munt on the same staff? I like it. You've got...
What is that, about 10 years?
It's almost, I don't think that's an exaggeration per se. So we look forward to the conversation with Aaron. We have open phones and texts between now and then to get into, as you alluded to, the Joe Beaver Show blessing, not curse or jinx. No. Joe Beaver Show jinx.
No, whatever the opposite of
that
is.
Yeah, let's go. So we need to get, we're going to have some other guests on as the week goes. It's busy in... we'll have Brandon Eichert on tomorrow, Taylor Cavanaugh, we think, on Thursday, Mandy Close on Friday, Jake Levengood at some point this week, Matthew Boyd next week. We got a lot going on. There's also a person that I want to reach out to because I love this story. It's an Oregon State story, and I look forward to hearing what his story is. I came across through something called the Coeur d'Alene Press, a newspaper, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, the Coeur d'Alene Press. Somehow it must have come across my feed because your phones begin to understand who you are and what you are. It's not like I looked up, I'm going to see what's going on in the Coeur d'Alene Press today. I mean, that didn't happen. So how these phones, how these things work in the world, John, do you know why I got an article into my phone through the Coeur d'Alene Press, and it says 84-year-old man to get his degree, and the photograph of the 84-year-old man, he's still 2 years away, but he wants to walk in 2027 at the age of 86 at the graduation ceremonies at Oregon State. There's a photograph of a gentleman named Richard Gauntlett, who pitched briefly for the Beaver baseball program, not on the varsity, but in the late 50s. Then life happened. Life intervenes.
Always does.
And now, at the age of 84, he's a student on the Oregon State e-campus, loves, according to the writer, who didn't get deep into the weeds about his love for Oregon State, but I could tell by the sweatshirt he was wearing and the baseball cap that he's a Beaver fan. The article doesn't go into it, but something to the effect of his beloved Oregon State. And with that sweatshirt and the baseball cap, that means it's not just, I really like the e-campus and I like the... the flora and fauna on the campus of Oregon State. That therein is my love. Yeah, probably. But I think sports has got to come into it.
Oh, yeah. We got to find him.
I've reached out. That was also been on the phone trying to find Richard Gauntlett, who lives in Coeur d'Alene, and a writer who does stories, feature stories, came across his story, and it came across my feed. And behold, Richard Gauntlett, who will walk in 2 years at the age of 86 with an undergraduate degree from Oregon State.
That's a great story, yeah. And it's one of the most difficult things in life is to leave and come back and finish. That's why when athletes do that, I have a little extra respect for them.
Unlike the father at USF, when Bill Russell came to complete his degree. Well, okay, Bill, that'll be $1,000, please.
Yeah, I don't know what the thinking is there.
I don't either. I just know that it broke my heart to get that backstory when I visited USF recently because I was not aware of that rift.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sorry to hear it. But I knew that Bill hadn't had a whole lot to do with his alma mater through the years, but then I found out why, and that was why. He had given so much to the university at that point that I think he was just flabbergasted, astonished that he would be asked to just simply pay up when money was still very tight. I mean, the NBA wasn't paying people a whole lot in those days, mm-hmm. and he was coming back in an offseason to finish up his degree, and your scholarship's over, Mr. Russell. So. that's just, again, that's erring in the opposite direction of where we are now, maybe erring going too far the other way with here's more.
And at that time, there are people who just, their personalities are mm-hmm. letter versus spirit, and they don't read the room, they don't think, they just zero in, not impressed whatsoever. With this very, very tall black man who
won an NBA title, and
could, of course, be a de facto mouth for the university moving forward for positive things.
An ambassador for the university. Right, an ambassador. That's so a better way ways. Of putting it.
Yeah.
$1,000.
Yeah,
please.
Just not even clued in. Just not clued in. Yeah. Now, maybe there would be, where was the next guy to run down the hall?
But then there's also the element too of pride and I suppose an element of stubbornness in that was it for Bill.
Yeah.
It was almost like, okay, I'm done with you and this place. And you almost hope that as the years went along, who knows what goes on in his mind and heart, but like John Stockton not coming to Gonzaga games.
I was
going to
say, didn't you have
the most famous Gonzaga alum, John Stockton, for basketball. Bing Crosby may be a little bit more famous in the overall scheme of things, but as an athlete, John Stockton.
Of course.
Right?
But going back to Bill, though,
now
I'm surprised at John Stockton, but didn't Bill Russell have that little bit of, I don't know what to say, but his personality in him where if you crossed him, you're dead.
Well,
to
there
him.
Was a stubbornness to him, no
yeah,
doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there a stubbornness, a fierce pride.
Right.
And I think there was just a sense of, okay, that's how you're treating me now coming back. Well, this I'm walking away from you.
I mean, I'm not saying he's wrong.
No, I'm not. I just wish that somehow, and there were numerous people reaching out to him through the years, from the university mm-hmm. to apologize. And Bill, you're one of our most famous and favorite sons. We we'll come back, we'll make it right.
Yeah,
we're sorry.
That's...
And Bill finally did go back, I think, for one trip. I can't remember exactly what year. He did make an appearance. I think it might have been to honor his coach, and he did go back and he spoke well of the place and of the time in his life. So there was some measure of reconciliation at some point.
Yeah.
Just as I hope John Stockton finds his way back into the kennel someday.
I'm sure he will.
But he's still, there's the tenderness, not happy about not being able to come into the games with his family during the COVID period when he didn't agree with the policies for masks and vaccines mm-hmm. and all of that. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously his choice, but he made a choice to let that still be a thing now. Like, okay, you told me I couldn't come in then, and I'm not coming back now either. I hope they get over that too.
Well, and I hope maybe they already have that the university reaches out to him and says, "Look, let's talk."
Right. Yeah,
that one's a little bit more tough because I can see where both sides would really put their heels stick, mm-hmm. Dig their heels in. But the Russell thing is it's too bad.
Good morning, John.
Yes.
Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show. Now we have open phones on the Downward Dog phone line 541-497-5356. 541-497-5356, the University Honda text line. I'm curious to know if any of you out there, oh, gosh, Rush, Geddy Lee. Yeah, of course, baseball. I mean,
they're as common as any rock band, as famous as any rock band out there.
They are. They're iconic. They're in the hall, yes. Various halls of
they're
fame.
Great, they're great, and I like them.
But did you know until today, did you know of Geddy Lee and the love for baseball?
You know, you asked me that, and I'm sure it came across my plate at one point or another while watching the documentary or something else. So I'm not completely shocked, like, oh, my gosh. But I can't say that I remember it either. And so Mike just had to step out because his phone was ringing, probably somebody that's going to come on the show. Yeah, I don't remember that. I do think that's really cool, especially, and you see that often. It has to be dug out with a lot of celebrities, but every once in a while, you know, you'll learn about celebrities, and it's almost always baseball where they have a love for it, and they have money too. You know, with Jay Leno, it's cars, and with some celebrities, it's baseball and collecting mm-hmm. baseballs. Maybe not signed balls exactly, but baseball paraphernalia because they can afford it.
Right.
And right. Like I was saying before you had to leave, it may have come across my purview at times when watching a documentary or something, but I didn't remember it. But there are enough celebrities out there who do secretly love baseball.
Yeah,
that it doesn't shock me. It's a little surprising, but it doesn't shock me. And I think it's very cool, especially, you know, when you get a chance to see what they have. And I'd like to all YouTube that Dan Rather interview.
Yeah. Now, we're going to take a break. We'll have open phones, any texts on these matters or anything else. Did you read Nick Daschle on the interesting format? I'm glad he spelled it all out. Nick Daschle, the Oregonian, OregonLive.com. The WCC tournament's format.
Oh, yeah.
Are you aware of it and how it works?
I didn't read Nick, but I will. I am aware of it because I looked at it to see dates for what we're doing.
Right, for the broadcast purposes.
And I noticed that it's combined.
Yes.
It's if you finish like in the top four, you don't start until like Friday or Saturday, mm-hmm. and then the whole thing starts like on Monday or Tuesday, and then it goes all the way through until like the following Monday.
Right.
So
it's strange.
You really want to be in the top four.
You do. It's an interesting format. Only one team outside of the top four in this format. And the way what's expected of you to win the tournament. Only one team has ever won the WCC tournament since they adopted this format back in 2003, I think.
Outside of
the top four, and that was, and it almost led. In fact, it led to him getting an offer for our job here, Billy Greer.
Huh.
The head coach at the University of San Diego in his first year after leaving the kennel, after leaving Mark Few and the Gonzaga program, Billy got the job at USD, and in his first year there was maybe a fifth or sixth seed, whatever the case, but is the mm-hmm. only seed outside the top four.
Wow!
And he ran through at the Orleans Arena and won the automatic berth and then won a game in the tournament. And so Billy was this is a young, hot new coach mm-hmm. after the 07-08 season, wherein the Beavers had a rough 6-25 campaign and the job came open. And Bob DeCarolis, I believe, in fact, I'm almost 100% sure that Billy was offered the job.
And turned it down?
And
because
just gotten to San Diego. 1 year, just gone to the tournament, felt like he owed them more than that. There was talk that perhaps his spouse wasn't thrilled. San Diego, Corvallis.
Oh, yeah,
San
there's
Diego,
a little bit of a difference
that,
there.
You know, I mean, she liked it down there.
And 100 more days of sunshine.
Exactly. So a lot of factors went into the decision for Billy. And he's talked to me about it. I mean, I've known him much of his life. And he said, you know, he thinks that's one of those. Looking back, I wish I would have said yes.
Yeah,
or that's
yeah.
a regret of sorts. Just as Dennis will say, biggest mistake he made in his professional career was leaving Oregon State.
Yeah, but with Billy's decision.
He's a young coach.
I like that he stayed and gave them another year or whatever mm-hmm. it ended up being because
he ends up getting fired there.
That's
but
the
he
right,
did
that
give
that was
them
the right thing to
it
do.
It was. And he felt like it was the right thing to do. So Craig Robinson comes and a lot of things happen then. And Craig did a lot of the heavy lifting on the basketball practice center and all of that. I mean, and then Coach Tinkle has come in after Craig. But the whole sequence, we don't have Wayne Tinkle now. If Billy would have said, who knows what the arc of Beaver basketball would have been had Billy said yes, but Billy, after that 07-08 season, the only team ever outside the top four to win the WCC tournament, Nick Daschle spells it out in detail, the dates, the format, who plays who, when, yeah. And you're right, it's a women's game, then a men's game, then another women's game, then a men's game, day by day by day by
day.
I
like
day,
that.
All the way
I
through.
Like it. The OSAA has done that before. In fact, they're doing it now. But I do. I like that. They both get center stage. They get to play in the same place. It makes it easier, probably logistically, for covering games. You'll see
oh,
Ron
yeah.
down there, and
yeah.
and it sounds pretty good. You could talk to anybody who has done Pilots games over the years and
right.
find out what that's like. I actually like both men and women's chances in their respective tournaments.
I do too.
I really do.
I
know that, I mean, the women may just be starting to really kind of click, and you never know. You can get hot
mm-hmm.
and win a couple of games like we saw with Oregon State do in 2020. I mean, you'd never figure on that. So, it is going to be interesting, and
yeah.
I look forward to reading the article to kind of get more of a mind's eye type of thing on it.
Canzano has weighed in again. I mean, I love one of the things I love about John is he just that drum is beating constantly.
Yeah.
In his any column he ever puts out, there's in mailbag stuff, and there's always stuff on the latest from the Pac-12, the ideas that he believes the conference is kicking around or ought to be kicking around or contemplating. If you have any opinions and thoughts about that, feel free.
Speaking of that,
yeah.
with a little bit of a connection there to a story I came across this morning. Did you listen to this morning?
I did not hear
okay,
you at
good.
All
then
this morning.
Hear...
I was busy with Mr. Geddy Lee's number
That's
one
fine.
Fan.
You're going to hear this for the first time.
Okay.
It's just a new wrinkle on where we are in this new world. And when we say in this new world, we're referring to all the changes in the conferences and TV packages and that, okay? Pick any sport, mm-hmm. but new world. Mostly we think about football, but it affects everybody. this is fascinating to me, and we can do it after the break.
Yeah,
we really
I want to hear it. I want to hear
game.
It. Let's get a break. Don't leave. Don't keep me hanging on as Sonny
will
James.
Not.
I think
I have
covered.
The article in front of me, so I won't
okay,
forget.
Okay, good. Is that a Brooke Benton the cover? Don't keep me hanging on. Sonny had a number one country music hit with it. The great Sonny James, the Southern Gentleman.
Well, then
don't
there's
keep
that
me hanging on.
Blonde gal hanging on.
Don't keep me hanging on. Who was the original on that? I don't know.
Huh?
Carole King, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, Buddy Holly, Geddy Lee.
I doubt it.
Let's take a break. 497-5356, 497-5356. I want to hear that story next on The Joe Beaver Show.
Hi, it's Colin. I know Mike Parker. Used to work with him in Portland. He's on right now with John Warren and the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Thank you, Colin. And yes, we are on together. Mike, again, is taking a call, and then sometimes we have to produce this show while we're on the air. So that's happening right now. He'll come back in the room, and I'll tell you about what I found this morning. This story, it doesn't amaze me like, oh, my God, it's new. It's earth-shattering. But it is a new wrinkle into what we are dealing with now in this world of NIL portal and college football realignment, all that kind of stuff. From Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard this?
Let me see if I can guess where you're going with
yes.
this. Because fascinating development. I think you're talking about Matt Rule saying, we ain't going to play no
Thank
spring
you.
Game.
Let me read the. Okay. Let me read about it. That's it. That is it. Where'd you hear about that? Where'd you see it?
The orange one, Dave,
okay.
texted me to say various things about, as he always does, but he said, did you see this story about
yeah, yeah.
Matt Rule? But go ahead on
Came
it.
Came out a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
The Nebraska spring game, one of the best attended in college football, fourth, by the way, and a major revenue producer, likely won't be held going forward because of Coach Matt Rule's concern about other teams poaching his players. It gets even more interesting.
It's fascinating.
Quote, and I love it when coaches just say it as it is. The word tampering doesn't exist anymore, Rule said Saturday at his midwinter news conference. It's just an absolute free, open, common market. I don't necessarily want to open up to the outside world and have people watch our guys and say, he looks like a pretty good player, let's go after him or let's go get him. The spring game has a long tradition at Nebraska. Last year, the event drew 60,000 plus to Memorial Stadium, fourth highest in the nation behind Ohio State, Alabama, and Penn State. The Cornhuskers game also was televised in the Big Ten Network. He said, quote, I dealt with a lot of people offering our players a lot of opportunities after that. So you go out and bring in a bunch of new players and showcase them for others, for other schools to watch. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, he said.
Right.
So he's out. Six Nebraska players entered the transfer portal the week after last year's spring game. This next paragraph I need help on. The spring portal period ends April 25th. Okay. The day before Nebraska's spring practice wraps up. Fine. However, players can switch schools without entering the portal, as was the case with Wisconsin safety Xavier Lucas's recent move to Miami. I mean, is that new? Is that what is
about,
that mean?
About leaving without officially declaring yourself for the portal?
I mean, are you, you can just go?
I think, Johnny, my sense is these portal period, these windows of time, you go into the portal and then the portal period closes, then we reopen it. But what if what you just said, please read that again. Players can go even if they don't enter the portal?
Yeah, players can switch schools without entering the portal, as was the case with XYZ.
Okay, now, if that's true, which I assume it is, then
why is there a portal?
Whether a portal window, a portal period. If I can just decide today, is the portal open? Well, not yet. Well, I'm not going to declare for it, but when
that is a great point.
I mean, then it doesn't matter. Then if I can just go now somewhere else, then why do you need to even have a portal period window?
And then the only way to double check that is to go back and say, okay, well, then maybe they can't leave when there isn't a portal window, but then there, it's the same thing.
I know.
It's literally the same thing if you're either putting your name on paper and saying, oh, I'm in here, I'm in the portal, or during the portal window, I'm just going to leave.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like that would make any sense. So it makes sense to assume, because we have to assume both sides, it makes sense to assume that you can leave any time, whether there's a portal window or not.
Right, right. So I don't, and that is all part of the welter of confusion that we are all in day to day in this world of college athletics. And so with Matt Rhule just coming out and saying there is no tampering. I mean, it's just an open, what do you say, an open free-for-all market, essentially an open market. It's like going, so I guess what he's saying is we're not going to showcase a spring game. Free open common market. Yeah. We're not going to have a spring game where everybody in the world can say, ooh, do you see that safety?
Yeah.
Let's go get him.
And he lost
and
six
there's
guys.
No, there's no, nothing that prevents it.
No.
There's only one rule. What? There are no rules.
And
it's the wildest, craziest time we've ever come across.
One can make the argument, and I'm sure it'll come in on a text, that, well, that's true of the regular season. Guys play, watch them.
Right.
You get in their ear when you're not supposed to, and you say, hey, come to us. But you have to wait until the end of the year for that to happen.
Well,
we haven't had any mid-season defections.
We haven't, when Matt Sluka defected after the 3-0 start at UNLV, wouldn't it have been interesting if 3 weeks later he's the Colorado State starting quarterback?
Right, right.
We haven't quite seen that, but that may be the next iteration. What prevents it?
I don't know that is legal.
Well, what is legal?
Well, someone, if it isn't legal,
no, I know.
If it isn't part of the rules, someone will sue and win.
Yeah. Or drop down a division and go to NAIA or D2 or whatever and say, well, or D3, we're going to, I'm leaving here, but I'm going to go here next week.
Yeah. Could you have done that in the old days where you didn't get penalized if you dropped a division?
Maybe. I don't know, though.
I don't know that we've ever seen a mid-season change in a player's spot. Text us if anybody knows.
Yeah, I mean, and so, I did come across that, was planning on reading the link that Dave was kind enough to send us. And he also sent something about a Paul Skeens trading card story. I haven't seen that. What's the story? Okay, I haven't opened it yet, Dave. What's the story on this Paul Skeens thing?
So they made a specific type of card. I cannot tell you from memory why it's so special. But it's a special type of new card that there's only one of. And assuming his greatness continues, it's worth a gazillion dollars, and I say that loosely because I don't know how much, but it's a lot. Forrest Gump used that term, and I use it all the time for a lot of money, a gazillion.
Okay.
And some little 11-year-old kid found it, and the school or the Pirates offered him everything under the sun. Well, not really. They offered him season tickets for the entire year, but he doesn't live anywhere near Pittsburgh.
Okay. What do you mean he found it?
He got it.
So it was a limited edition?
Limited edition, and he got it. He opened the bubble gum package, and there it is.
Sandy Koufax. There's Paul Skeens.
Yes.
Nobody, Koufax never, I mean, I collected cards for years and never opened a card with Koufax in it, ever. Anyway.
Yeah. So he got this card, and they want it, and he's like, no, I'm keeping it.
Good for him.
And there's more to it. There's more to it as far as the last headline I saw was something about the kid. Like, can you believe this kid?
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get a chance to read it, but I do know the story prior to that particular article.
Okay.
And he was smart. I mean, think about it. If it's really worth that much and he can't go to games all the time.
No, he's doing the right thing.
And they offered him like a suite. Not a for the year, but a sweet appearance.
The Pirates themselves want this card?
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird story.
It is weird. And what are they making now that they haven't made in 100 years as far as cards go that makes it valuable?
That I haven't read. And when you say they made, who's they? Is it Topps or Donruss?
Well, and that's...
I don't know who they is.
I have a three-ring binder from 1990 of mint condition NFL cards. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at that thing in 25 years, but I know where it is.
Yeah.
I mean, is there something in there? 1990 football?
Probably.
And they had cards where there was a little piece of the fabric of their jersey on the card. And I'm not a collector. Someone gave it to me. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Put it on the shelf and forgot about it for 30 years.
Hey, let's take our second break of the hour. If you have anything on any of this, feel free to jump in. 497-5356. Aaron Fitt from D1Baseball.com at 12:05 with a primary focus on the Beavers, but he is a national writer. And I think, was it the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, Hank Hager released yesterday, has the Beavers at 7.
Yeah.
So I think we are safe to just simply refer to the Beavers as a consensus top 10 team.
Yeah,
even they may be outside the top 10 in one of them.
Well, they're 10-10. 7-7, and I don't know what the
fifth is. I thought I saw an 11 somewhere. I don't know. What is D1? What do they have?
Seven?
Okay. Yeah. What are your thoughts about the upcoming Beaver baseball season and the things you're reading? Now, are you planning on going to Surprise as it becomes an annual trek? And are any of you planning on, have you ever been to the West Coast Conference tournaments, the Orleans Arena? Are you going to go and see the men and women play? Go Beavs. And we talk about how we'd like to see, maybe more of a crossover with fans supporting both and finding the means and wherewithal to get to both. Does the WCC tournament this year give you that chance with both teams during the same week in the same venue? On the same day, probably playing games often on the same day? Any thoughts on that? And do you like the format and rewarding excellence in the regular season for the top two seeds and the top four seeds in particular? The top two teams earn automatic seeds into the semifinals. If you're first or second in the regular season, your tournament participation begins in the West Coast Conference semifinals. Third and fourth place teams in the quarters, fifth and sixth place teams sit out the first round, another level of bye. And then the tournament opens 10-11. The winner of that game advances to the first round. So you have a tournament opener, preliminary game, and then you go to the first round from there. It's kind of a play-in game to get to the first round where the 7, 8, 9, and the winner of the 10 and 11 teams square off. And as Nick Daschle points out in his well-informed, insightful article about planning to go to Vegas March 6th through the 11th, tournament wins on consecutive days required to win the West Coast Conference Tournament Championship. If you're a 10-11 seed, you got to win 6 games in consecutive days.
Jeez.
7, 8, and 9, 5 wins. You need 5 days in a row of winning games. If you're a fifth and sixth seed, you need 4 days, 4 straight wins. At 3 and 4, you need 3 wins. And at 1 and 2, you need 2 to win the If you're a 1-2, you just need to win the semis and the finals, and you win the conference automatic berth.
That's crazy.
But if you're 10-11, you got a shot. You just have to win 6 consecutive games.
Do you like that?
I kind of like this format. It's intriguing to me because it does reward the regular season somewhat proportionately.
Yeah, yeah.
So I
and still gives last place
and
a chance.
It gives 10-11. You're saying there's a chance. Yeah, you
and
are.
And unlike the actual NCAA tournament, the last place team was last, so they should have to work a little harder.
Yes.
And you don't feel cheated if they win it all versus a 1-game victory.
I kind of like it,
yeah.
Actually. I kind of like how they've done this formatic thing. Do you have any thoughts on that? Are you going to Surprise? You're going to Vegas? You're doing both? Your excitement level for all of that or anything else you want to jump in with? Any Geddy Lee Rush fans in our midst? And were you aware of Geddy Lee's love for baseball? I wasn't aware of Dylan's until Baseball Weekly and Kip Carlson's photograph was about Paul Wehner's exit velo. But if you've got some thoughts on Rush and Geddy Lee, too, feel free. And the Paul Skeens trading card thing and Matt Rhule canceling a spring game thing, the Blazers continuing to win thing, anything you'd like to join us with, we'd love to hear from you. 541-497-5356 on The Joe Beaver Show. Not to an invited guest.
No.
Good morning, everybody. Open phones, texts, if you'd like to jump in with anything here. A
couple of texts here.
What do you got on the fan?
I don't have a name.
Everything's
on
the fan.
Where's the name on this one? Anyway, the question is on the portal thing from a listener about wasn't there a changeover at Nebraska last year, and that's why those 6 were able to leave? No. Matt Rhule is starting his 3rd year this year at Nebraska. I just looked it up, and I knew he was there for a couple of years, but I didn't know how long. So thank you for that text. But no, it's not because of that. It's just because they took him. Now, CVB has an interesting answer to this. It still, I think, leaves a question. That he says, portal is for those who want to move but are not a top already known entity. I guess that's a way of advertising
right.
Yourself.
Yeah, you're right. Then I'm available.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in moving on. Yeah,
and his example is you're not required to advertise to sell a car. If it's an Accord, you'd like a large group to become aware of it. If it's a Lamborghini, it's word of mouth. Okay, that I get that. Does that mean then, it still doesn't answer the question, can anybody leave willy-nilly outside of portal windows? That's the question.
Based on that one sort of cryptic statement that a person can do that outside the portal window.
Well, in the article, it makes it sound like you can do it outside of the window. But the way CVB says it, I don't think you can.
Well, see, I'm sorry to not know. But I'm also, I wish I knew, but I don't apologize for not knowing the ins and outs of how this whole thing works. It's complicated to a certain degree, but in another way, what Matt Rhule makes it uncomplicated. There's no rule. I mean, there's no poaching. There's no tampering. There's no this. There's no that. Just go. Hey, I like you. I'm going to call you. We have this to offer you. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is.
It really is, and it's not sustainable.
It isn't, but anytime anyone comes up with an idea, it doesn't work.
I know.
Now, my idea might actually stick, and that is cut down the ability to play 4 games and then redshirt to 0.
Right,
you make an appearance.
Right.
I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but it might be. It certainly would take away from guys using those 4 games to see where they are
to showcase themselves.
And then leaving.
Yeah,
and then
true.
Leaving.
No, it would. I think it would cut down a bit. It wouldn't reduce it to a trickle, it might slow things down just a little bit.
Mark in Corvallis says 4-star quarterback Tristan Tia will sign tomorrow. And
that's good news.
That is
we
good
have
news.
Some coaching news, too. Kofense Henson does move on.
He left.
Yesterday, you were waiting for that second source, and we moved on to other things. But congratulations to Coach Fence. Kofense Henson has done a nice job, and he gets a job in the NFL. And then today's news involves the return of Danny Langsdorff. Did you see that, Johnny?
No.
Did
that break this morning?
Yeah, Langsdorff, Hank Hager from Oregon State University Athletic Communications.
What's the timestamp? Say yesterday.
10:16 a.m. this morning.
Okay. All right.
Former Oregon State offensive coordinator Danny Langsdorff is back with the Beavers, rejoining the program as senior quality control analyst. He worked as OC for the Beavers from 2005 through 2013 under Coach Riley. Doesn't say under Coach Riley, I'm just providing that. But he comes back to Corvallis after a three-year stint as offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Temple. Coach Bray is excited to welcome him back, as the quote indicates. And so Langsdorff, who coached for Mike Riley during his entire first tenure in Corvallis, led to a second stint under Mike, three seasons at Nebraska as OC. A one-year gap between stints as Riley's OC, serving as quarterbacks coach with the New York Giants in 2014. So I'm glad. That's a good football coach in mind coming back into the Oregon State world in Danny Langsdorff.
When we first started this show, when my only claim to fame, you know, you're always looking for connections.
Right.
And my connection is that when I started my career in 1990, fall of 1990, one of the first games I called with someone who was my mentor. So we worked together. Danny Langsdorff was the quarterback for McMinnville High School.
Yes, he was.
Versus Glencoe that night.
Yep.
I think I have it on tape somewhere.
Yeah, and you've talked to Danny about it, and he'd love to have the tape. If you have the tape, don't throw it away.
No.
Remember the Pat Murphy story. When I say to you, remember the Pat Murphy story, Murphy, Ernie Johnson, here's Murphy, Dale Murphy. We fall in love with what we see every day. You covet what you see every day. You know, the Hannibal Lecter clue.
Was it a recent story?
You know, every story we tell, we've told many times. Pat Murphy.
I do remember you talking about Dale Murphy. Pat
Murphy.
Recently.
I had the pleasure of meeting Ernie Johnson, the elder, once, and very nice man. Very nice man. But it bothered us because we were Dodger fans in those days. Oh, wasn't it fun to be a fan of a team? I kind of remember.
And then you quit.
We were watching Lord of the Rings the other day, one of the old shows, in Gandalf, when he comes back after this harrowing experience in the spirits or whatever, and they come, Gandalf, and the old white wizard, Gandalf, yes, that's what they used to call me. Even though that's all we knew him as. But I think of Murphy, I think of those days as a fan, and Ernie Johnson is Murphy. It's the way he said it. I liked it. Kind of bothered me because he scared me, but it was fun to be a fan. Claudel was the guy I hated the most. Claudel Washington hurt me. Who hurt you? If you ask me the question, Lionel, who hurt you?
Hello?
Well, I'll tell you. Claudel Washington hurt me. 1982 hurt me over and over again. Murphy, not so much, but Claudel,
What did Pat Murphy do?
Well, Murphy, one day I was talking to Pat about, hey, you were a player manager for the Tri-City Triplets in the Northwest League, and I called those games.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, do you? I said, and I, you know, I announced those games. Do you have those games on tape? Pat Murphy says to me, you have any of those games on tape? I'd pay you a lot of money to have them. Nobody had them. I had them for a long time, and I think in one of those cleaning purges that we are occasionally compelled to do,
yep,
whether by a mom or somebody else.
Yeah.
I think I might have unloaded some old tapes that included Murphy as the player manager for the Tri-City Triplets, and he wanted them. Aaron Fitt next.
Hey, Siri.
Uh-huh.
Take me to the Joe Beaver Show. 1240 Joe Radio.
One option is Joe Crow Reservoir in Oregon. Is that the one you're looking for?
No.
Which the Joe Beaver?
The Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
On it.
It's a destination people have sought for generations.
Are we near Oregon?
And take my wagon train to the Willamette Valley in Oregon.
Be sure to come prepared.
I'm fascinated.
I'm fascinated too. Right on the arm.
And with the proper gear.
Shall we select our masks?
And even in this exacting age.
Everything you say comes back to bite you.
Come ready to contribute, even if your own son has his doubts.
Dad and his mysterious phone calls.
Remembering what a call to Joe can do.
Those phone calls put you through college.
As you draw closer, Note the surrounding characters.
Chapel is closed for the COVID.
And know this, John and Mike will celebrate when you get here.
Bells will ring when you arrive.
Arrived at the Joe Beaver Show. 1240 Joe Radio.
We appreciate you making the Joe Beaver Show a destination. Mike Parker with John Warren, the Joe Beaver Show in hour number two. We'll be visiting with Brandon Eisert tomorrow. We had Drew Rasmussen on recently, Taylor Cavanaugh and Mandy Close to come, Matthew Boyd next week. Nick Madrigal was kind enough to join us yesterday. And when I mention some of those names, it just speaks to the great heritage of Beaver baseball. And as we get ever closer to the 2025 season, it is, of course, all of our hopes that years from now on Joe Beaver shows or shows like this, people will be talking to the likes of Trent Carraway and Iva Arquette and Dax Whitney and others about one of those special Oregon State seasons. And to help us preview that, and it's impossible to know, of course, what all is going to unfold, but it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show a friend of the show and to baseball, college baseball through the years on our program, and the great work that Aaron Fitt has done, managing editor and national writer for D1 Baseball, joining us. Aaron, good afternoon. Thanks for your time. It's my hope that we'll be talking to players from 2025 about their great experience. We do shows like this 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now. And what I'm reading from you and other sources, there's a chance for that this year. Is that your feel about the Beavers in 25?
Yeah, certainly, guys. I think this team's very dangerous. You know, what's not to like, really? I mean, they were in a Super Regional last year. They bring a lot back, and I think they're hungry. I think they're very talented, and the schedule is fun that they put together. It's not going to be easy with a lot of road games, but I think they're built to handle it. And so this has a chance to be a special year, certainly, you know, after the dissolution of the Pac-12. And of course, we've talked about it before on your show and how rotten that whole thing was. I'm sure that this particular program, they've got a lot of pride, and they're going to come out with a little bit of extra, I would think, chip on their shoulder. Not that they ever really needed it at Oregon State. They always have that edge to them. But maybe just a little bit extra this year. I can see this being a really neat, special storyline.
Aaron Fitt joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. Aaron, you mentioned the schedule, and there's no conference tournament. Given the schedule that you see that they have put together for the year and the challenges in the road, but no tournament, do you feel like there's enough in the schedule? And if they navigate it well enough that they could get any common denominator to Omaha always has the Beavers playing at home in a super regional to get to Omaha. Do they need to have that? Does the schedule lay out and provide them that opportunity, in your opinion?
I think if they're as good as we think they are, then yeah, they're going to have to win a lot of games, you know, but they're in front of them. I mean, you know, I don't think they're going to be struggling in the strength of schedule metrics. When you've got, you know, opponents like Virginia and Oklahoma and Indiana should be good. I know they play all those teams in the first couple weeks. And, San Diego's probably the team to beat in its conference this year. Nebraska's a preseason top 25 team, and that's on the road. Irvine's a projected regional team. Obviously, Oregon is the favorite in the Big Ten this year. So between all those series, you've got some nice high-end kind of tent poles for this schedule. We kind of like Hawaii's club. Maybe not as good as they were last year, but I would think they'll be competitive. Iowa is usually competitive. So, I don't see a lot of real drains on the schedule from an RPI standpoint. Fullerton and Long Beach sure need to bounce back to something closer to what they've been historically, because they were not good last year. You know, and it would be kind of sad and ironic if those two big brand names in college baseball wind up being the ones that cost Oregon State from a strength of schedule standpoint if they can't get it together, you know. But let's hope they can kind of take a step forward this year. One way or another, I think Oregon State is built to handle the schedule. And, if they win 40 games or something, yeah, I think they could certainly host a regional and maybe be in the conversation for a top eight, although I think that's going to be a tougher ask.
So they did make a great schedule, and getting through it, obviously they would be rewarded. But if you go back in time before that, did you have an opinion on whether or not they should have gone independent or perhaps joined the West Coast Conference like Washington State did?
Yeah, I was concerned that it was going to be hard to put together a good schedule, when you're just you're so limited once other teams get into conference play. Your options are just, you don't have a lot of them. You know, it's just like who's got a random weekend off, you know, in May and April. Those are hard to find. But they did a better job, you know, finding those than I expected. Whether they would have been better off with West Coast Conference schedule or not, I don't know. At the time, I was probably leaning toward, hey, you're better off being in a conference because at least you can win the league and get an auto bid. At least for this year, they did a good job. I think they probably wound up better off this year than they would have had they joined the West Coast Conference.
And one more thing on scheduling, and we can move on to the team and some other things, but do you see them sitting and not doing anything when everyone's playing in their tournament being any kind of a detractor in the end?
That's an interesting question because, you know, there are some teams over the years we've seen, like, go to the SEC tournament. South Carolina used to do this in Ray Tanner's era when they were, you know, winning national championships. They would go there and they'd go 0-1 or 0-2 and they'd go home. And they spend the entire week practicing and just really drilling down, and that would make them sharper as they headed into regionals, just like doing two-a-days or whatever Coach Tanner could dream up. Some ways that can be a benefit. You're also more rested. Your arms aren't taxed having to run through some crazy conference tournament. And we saw maybe some of that in the Pac-12 tournament down in Arizona, those hot days, and you're playing some crazy marathon games. That can wear you out a week before the games that really, really matter. So maybe it's an advantage, you know, being able to just kind of rest up and practice and make sure your arms are at full strength. I also see the flip side of that. Maybe, you know, a team could come out of that flat, but I don't think an Oregon State team coached by Mitch Canham would come out flat after having extra time to practice.
Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com, joining us as we close in on the start of this much-anticipated 2025 season. The Beavers are a consensus top 10 team. You have them at number 7, but you also have in a recent article, Aaron, that you like their infield, the infield, almost as much as anyone in the country. Tell us a little bit, I guess, about why you're so high on that group.
Yeah, it's a great group. You know, obviously, I think Caraway is, and Ivar Kett, those are kind of your headliners, and those are All-American caliber players. We only had 3 shortstop spots on our preseason All-America teams, and Arquette was number 4. You know, he was the first guy who missed out on one of those 3 spots, and he had some support in the room for one of those spots. I mean, there's maybe... He was good last year. He hadn't played shortstop at the Division I level. He played him on the Cape. And so maybe that was the one thing that held him back in that conversation. But I saw him do it on the Cape. He can really defend. I think he's a legit shortstop. I think he's a 5-tool player, a potential superstar. So, if he performs up to his ability, that's a guy you can build your team around. And, of course, Caraway, you know, being healthy for a full season, we know what he's capable of. We saw it in a short sample size last year. But that's just an elite right-handed college bat, you know, with power and the ability to, I think, hit for average as well. And, I think he's continuing to develop defensively. He's always been able to throw. So, you're looking at 2 big stars on the left side of the infield. I think Trotsky at second base is kind of an underrated guy. You know, he's a veteran who can really, really defend at a high level. Kind of reminds me of some of those, you know, throwback kind of grinder second baseman they've had over the years at Oregon State. Just winning baseball players who can drop your jaw sometimes with their defensive ability. He's one of those guys, and kind of a gnat at the plate, you know, scrappy, tough to strike out. So I think he's just a nice piece in there. And then, of course, you get the big donkey, you know, Jacob Craig over first base, that just a big, strong man who can pick it on defense and drive it out of the park. So I think that's a great group on the dirt. And you love to be strong on the dirt, you know, that's for sure.
Aaron, and then going to the outfield, there's some dudes out there, too, starting with Gavin Turley. But, I mean, Dallas Macias has got – I mean, it looks like he's poised to just keep building on what he's been doing. Right field may be kind of a battle between Easton Tolkan and Reeder for who gets that spot opening day and carries it. But with Turley and Macias, what do you make of them kind of anchoring the outfield?
Yeah, again, really good group. You know, I mean, Turley – since he set foot on campus, has been a guy that has opened eyes. I mean, with his power potential, his bat speed, his athleticism. And he only hit a bunch of home runs last year, almost 20 home runs, if I recall. And, if he could just cut down that strikeout rate a little bit more, there could be another jump in there. I mean, with the hit tool piece, he could make a run at 30 home runs if he just makes a little bit more contact. But regardless, I mean, it's an elite right-handed power hitter. And Macias is just a winner. I'm a big fan of him. You know, left-handed hitter that has feel for the barrel and has energy and runs, and he's a good defender in the outfield. He throws pretty well, and he's got more pop than maybe you realize. So he just turned himself into a really good all-around player. I liked him early last year at Globe Life, where he really kind of emerged as a mainstay. He opened my eyes. He opened David Seifert's eyes, our scouting guy who was there with me, just because he's a better player maybe than you think. And then the more you watch him, the more you like him.
Yeah.
So that's a great deal. I'm also really high on Talp and Reader. You know, just athletes, man. I mean, I love the athleticism of this position player group.
Aaron, one last, John's got a couple of other things. We always appreciate your time and perspective on the show. Travis Bezzana at the end of last year, as I was walking with him and Turley, Bezzana said, "Mike, that guy's going to break my home run record next year." So what you just said about the potential that Gavin has, and Travis wasn't just whistling Dixie per se there either. I mean, when he says something, you listen, you lean in. And I think the strikeout thing, if he does cut it down, I mean, the contact itself, right? I mean, what Travis says, you feel like could happen.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he's got the ability. There's no question about the bat speed, and it's just a matter of pitch selection, I think. And you know, he still took his walks, you know, so that's good. I mean, I guess that's one thing to remember too. We can get caught up in the strikeout numbers, but if you're seeing a lot of pitches, you're getting deep into counts, and of course, if you're a scary power hitter, you're going to be pitched more cautiously. You're going to get deeper into counts, but it's a double-edged sword. Yeah, sure, you're going to strike out more if you have more two-strike counts, but you're also going to draw more walks. And so it's not really that terrible if you strike out 80 times if you're also walking 50 times, you know. So you can live with that. But if he could just get a little bit more discipline, just that next little notch, then I think it could unlock even another level for him.
Aaron, I can't remember which publication it was, but it put Iva Arquette at like 6 in the top 100. And some hint at perhaps another 1-1 opportunity for Oregon State, if not this year, then maybe the following year. Do you see that in him? And how does a guy that big move? You saw him in the Cape, you said. I mean, that's some big size at shortstop.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. I mean, it reminded me of when DJ LeMahieu was at LSU. You know, Danny Pinheiro, who was national championship shortstop for Virginia in 2015. You know, that kind of a build, that longer build, but also it's you know, he's got some muscle to him. You know, it's not just a lanky guy, right? I mean, as you know, I mean, he's strong. But he's really took me by surprise how quick he was. Watching him on the Cape, I was like, wow, this guy, you know, I was skeptical that he was a legit shortstop just because of his size. Anytime you see a guy that big as short, usually those guys move to third base. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cal Ripken was kind of an exception. And even at the end of his career, he played third base. But he was, you know, you don't see a lot of 6'4", 6'5", shortstops. You see some from time to time. But, you know, it's a position that requires quickness and that, you know, that twitchiness, and he's kind of got that. And I find that very intriguing. If he goes out there and plays shortstop at a really, really high level this year with his offensive ability and everything else he brings to the table, yeah. I mean, I think he's a potential top 5, top 10 pick. Maybe he could be number one. You know, I don't quite view him that way yet, but he's on the rise. You know, I could see it coming if he really, really shows that he's an elite defensive shortstop.
Yeah, now let's move to the mound. What about Dax Whitney coming in as a freshman? A lot of hype over this kid. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean it's a really exciting arm. You know, upper 90s guy. You know, with emerging secondary stuff. It's not like he can really spin it. I've never seen him in person. I'm looking forward to seeing him. Hopefully soon. I'm not sure exactly when I'm going to see the Beavers. I think our guy Kendall Rogers is hogging that opening weekend down there. You know, it's going to be an exciting guy. I mean, he's kind of the next star for them on the mound. I think that's pretty clear. Getting him to campus was a major coup for Oregon State. And, you know, I would think he'll be a weekend guy. You know, whether it happens immediately or maybe they ease him in a couple of weeks in, I don't know. But you guys probably are more up to date on that than I am on his progression. But it's one of those guys that I think even as a freshman, he's going to be a real linchpin in that rotation.
And on the mound in general, what are your thoughts on that, Matt? Are you high on what the Beavers potentially have? Let's just say with Keljo as a Friday guy, maybe Dax on Saturday, maybe Ethan Kleinschmidt on Sunday. We'll see how it all sort of sorts itself out. But are you pretty high on Beaver pitching heading into the year too?
I am, and I'm maybe a little bit more of a believer than some of our guys who are just a little skeptical. I mean, is Kelly Joe really a Friday starter? He's very good in the bullpen. I know some people on our staff are like, is he enough of a strike thrower? Is there enough command there? Is it really a starter profile? I'm kind of a believer. I mean, is he a true ace? I don't know. We need to see it. He needs to show us that. That's a legitimate question mark about this team. That's why they're number seven and not, number one or two, mm-hmm. is because there are a few questions to answer with the pitching. But the talent is there, and Eric Segura is the only guy that, I don't know, he probably would be in the mix, I would think, for a Sunday spot.
Yeah.
He's got real stuff and feel the pitch. And I would think, with the experience he gained as a freshman last year, making like 16 starts, that's the guy that I would think could take another step as well. So I think the ingredients are there with that group, and some other younger arms, probably in the bullpen, like a Lake Palmer or what's the redshirt freshman? December, is it? James DeCramer.
James DeCramer. Right, yeah, James DeCramer.
DeCramer.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I heard some good things about him. Yes. If he can get healthy and stay healthy. So, they've got some other pieces there, along with like a Joey Munt, who somehow is still around as an eight-year guy.
Right.
Nice to have those old guys around.
Yeah. Hey, the final thing is sort of in a general look at when it comes to pitching. When I look, I rub my eyes these days, Aaron, at when I talked to Rich Dorman, the Beavers pitching coach, about, okay, well, tell me about this pitcher. What's his velo? What does he touch? And it's just 93, 96, 97. Yeah. Is that everywhere, Aaron, in your world? I mean, the top premier teams that you write about and follow, is everybody built that way in this era with guys that are just bringing it in at 93 to 97 on a regular basis?
Whole lot more than it used to be. It's really incredible how much the game has changed in that respect, maybe more than any other way. I mean, I didn't think back to 20 years ago. I mean, Dallas Buck and Jordan Nickerson were elite college pitchers, but it's like 88 to 92,
right.
Maybe touch of three, right? And that was like an above average, average to above average fastball. At that point, I feel like Buck can maybe touch you a four. Oh, wow, 94. that's a plus fastball at college at that time, So, it's just now that's very routine. And that's just the way it's gone. I mean, as we've gotten better training pitchers, I suppose. I mean, it's kind of, you can look at it a variety of ways. You can say, well, maybe more guys blow out now because everybody's chasing velocity. Maybe there's more, there's more scoring in the game now because everybody's chasing velocity. They're not learning how to pitch as much and they're walking more guys. And hitters have also been able to adjust to the big fastball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like just because you throw 97 now, it doesn't guarantee you any success. Even if you're in the zone, it doesn't guarantee you success because guys can square that up. They're used to seeing it. And so it's just kind of like, you're watching Pebble Beach and guys are blowing it by these trees that used to be way down the fairway and it's not even a factor anymore.
Right, yeah.
Number 18 doesn't matter. On number 18, that tree doesn't matter. Just bomb it over there because guys are stronger. The golf ball flies farther.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever. All those same things apply to baseball. It's just kind of the natural evolution of the game.
Well, I once saw, this is way back, but I saw Cole Gillespie hit a three-run homer on a 99-mile-per-hour Tim Lincecum fastball at Goss Stadium at Coleman Field. Buck and Lincecum squaring off back in some pretty exciting days on a Friday in Corvallis. That's an unforgettable moment. But to see 99 and a guy straighten it out and drill it, I mean, so we had it, but it was so infrequent back in those days, as you pointed out. Aaron, it is great to talk to you. Thank you for your time and perspective. Sorry that you won't be crossing paths with our broadcast group down in Surprise. Rich Burke and Josh Warden will be there while I finish up men's basketball. But I hope that our paths will cross somewhere down the road in this very intriguing Beaver season. Thanks for making yourself available to us, as always.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. That's Aaron Fidd, managing editor, national writer for D1Baseball.com, and he has been great to us over the years.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he's fantastic and amazing how much he knows. I don't even know he doesn't really necessarily cover this part of the country.
Right.
Kendall Rogers does,
yeah.
And yet he still knows.
Oh, he knows.
He knows all the details and players and coaches and all that. It's amazing what those guys do.
Let's take a break on that note,
shall
Doc.
We?
Yes. Shall we? Shall we what? Well, we'll figure it out as we go. If you'd like to join us, 541-497-5356. 541-497-5356. That's the Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line. Just to hear baseball being discussed, not only Geddy Lee's collection and Bob Dylan reading Baseball Weekly, but to hear about Gavin Turley and Dallas Macias and Yako, Big Jacob Craig, Iva Arquette. Any thoughts for you as you get ready for another season? How much are you enjoying just the fact that we're in February, we're in the window?
Are you going?
And are you going? Would love to hear from any of you on that. The hoops tournaments, the games coming up. Are you enjoying yourself through everything that we're uncertain about? Our future in the league, who's next, as Tom Lehrer would say, is that you want to stay, you want to have geographical integrity, and hey, this Memphis Tulane thing, let's be the one league that has geographical integrity. Are you for that? Or no, Memphis brings too much sizzle to the table, and Tulane, and all, and let's do that. Whatever you want to talk about, feel free. 541-497-5356. Thanks for joining us on The Joe Beaver Show. We continue on The Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren. Our thanks to Aaron Fitt for joining us. Brandon Eisert tomorrow. Taylor Cavanaugh Thursday. Mandy Close on Friday. Mandy Close Cavanaugh. That's at least our plan. Taylor also has in the works, he texted me, an upcoming documentary. Bless his heart. On the 92 Dream Team and their Portland games and the whole experience of the Dream Team coming to Portland. Taylor, was he even born then? I don't know. Probably not. No, I doubt it. Maybe he'd been born by then. Yeah, he probably would have been born. But he wouldn't have followed that, as we all did. And yet, through archival footage and all of that, he's put together a documentary about the Dream Team in 92 before they went to Barcelona, which I think is going to be really
an interesting watch. When's that going to be done?
Well, we'll find out from Taylor on Thursday.
All right.
We have open phones now on the Downward Dog phone line, 541-497-5356, and the University Honda text line. Mark S. on the text line was kind enough to send us a link to an article, kckingdom.com. Thank you, Mark. This is very apropos. We'll go to Jeff here in just a second. But Joe Summers, the writer, I don't know anything about this website, but kckingdom.com, Joe Summers advocates that the Chiefs, ahead of the Super Bowl, need to call up Stephen Ballhawk Nelson. They need to call up Stephen Nelson for his veteran presence and savvy and ability for this big game. They could use his talent, experience, shutdown ability, et cetera, for the biggest, for the chance for the three-peat, Stephen Nelson being advocated for on kckingdom.com.
He hasn't played yet this year, but he's on the practice squad out of retirement.
Right. It's a good story. We'll get maybe a little bit more on that, but thank you, Mark, for the link. Let's go to Jeff in Corvallis on the Joe Beaver Show. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Good afternoon, guys. Just calling about baseball because it's my favorite sport, and... So yes, I'm going to Surprise.
Cool.
And I'm gonna go to Round Rock, and I'm gonna go to Arlington.
Wow, good for you.
That's a good run, Jeff. That's a good run.
Yeah, you know, first Surprise is always the first shot at usually some pretty good weather, and then as I explained in my Cotton Bowl trip, my son lives in Fort Worth, so it just makes sense to extend it and go see the whole thing. And I believe we play Ohio State, so I'll catch a few more of their fans that I can thank.
Yes, good.
Those things stick with me. But good, yeah, just looking forward to it. I was excited about Beaver baseball. I think they're going to be really solid. I've talked to one of the coach's relatives and very positive about who they've brought in and who stayed. And what a great tribute to them that they just keep going and going, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and I intend to get a sunburn.
Good for you, Jeff. Yeah. That's just around the corner. Happy for you. Please give us a call maybe while you're down there or report back some of your early observations. We'd love to hear from you either during or after the experience, but thanks for sharing that with us.
Well, all right. Great.
Thank you, Jeff. Open phones on the Downward Dog phone line, 497-5356. Anybody else joining Jeff and heading to Surprise? Has it become an annual event for many years? Oh, yeah. It's our rite of passage into spring. That spring is around the corner and Beaver baseball returns. Your thoughts, 497-5356. or the University Honda text line that Mark used. What is the upshot from Joe Summers on the site, kckingdom.com? Yeah, ultimately he gets to calling up Nelson, but there must be kind of at the beginning of the story a reason.
He says the Chiefs are off preparing for Super Bowl against the Eagles, and the key component of the matchup will be how defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo can slow down a fearsome passing attack led by Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, and Devontae Smith. They're some of the most talented skill position players in the league, to say nothing of superstar running back Saquon Barkley. But there's one player, he says, that they need to call up from the practice squad, and that is cornerback Steven Nelson. He hasn't played a down since rejoining the team from retirement, yet he could still provide an impact during the most important game of the season, he writes. It's unlikely that Nelson would play a big role in the Super Bowl. He's a 32-year-old defender with plenty of tread on his tires, though his experience could prove to be a valuable asset. In 2023 with the Houston Texans, Nelson surrendered just a 73.3 passer rating when targeted in coverage. A number of that rivals All-Pro Trent McDuffie and some of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. At the very least, he's an upgrade over guys like Nazee Johnson and Keith Taylor in the secondary.
It's interesting.
That's pretty good.
It is interesting because Joe Summers writing that way, I feel a little bit like, well, I spoke with Chauncey Gardner the other day. I spoke with Joe Summers, and he said, now, if Joe knows that and writes that, and that he's an upgrade over what the Chiefs are currently running out there, then doesn't one imagine that Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo and everybody else knows that too? Is there... What if that's true, what Joe Summers opines, you know, writes, and it's an opinion that this is something they ought to do.
Yeah.
But then he gives numbers to support it and says it's an upgrade. Then I guess part of me, I hope it happens, but if it hasn't yet, I mean, we haven't seen anything on the transaction wire. We're now in game week for the Super Bowl. Is it going to happen? I hope so. Maybe it'll be something we find out on Wednesday or Thursday that he's been activated and called up. So
if he knows it because the numbers, then the coaches should?
Well, I mean, of course they. I mean, there isn't anything lost,
right?
I wouldn't think, in an NFL front office that... So I love the sound of it, and let's hope it happens for Steven's sake and for Beaver Nation. That would lend we'll all watch the game, but that would lend an even greater interest if I know, oh, hey, there's Steven Nelson in the game right now.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. That'd be great. And it would pay off for him coming out of retirement.
Exactly.
Because if he just comes out and he never leaves the practice squad, then wouldn't a guy be ready to go, yeah, I'm kind of done with this?
Maybe an agent negotiated, look, if you guys make this, you know, my guy will sign to the practice squad and help you there and be ready for depth and all of that. You make the Super Bowl, he's got to play at least one series. Can that be negotiated? It certainly is a college football. You know, I need my guy. Okay, you got it. You got it. Whatever.
In this day and age.
Yeah. So I don't know. I like the thinking of Joe Summers. But he clearly much more immersed in the NFL world and to trot out those numbers about his defensive rating, so to speak, as good as that of a Trent McDuffie, according to him, but under the radar, playing for the Houston Texans last year, retiring, the age of 32. I heard a guy with Colin or somebody somewhere saying cornerbacks generally are done by 30. That's sort of their shelf life. It's a tough position. But Steven could be in that kind of mode wherein the rejuvenation of the body, practice squad stuff. But, I mean, if he retired, came out of retirement, he might be ready to play some really vibrant, exciting football. Tread on the tires, yes, as Summer says. But he might also have a little bit of freshness to him, as we've talked about with Jake Levengood and Nick Madrigal, where you're forced to sit for injury reasons and different reasons, but it can help you feel stronger and better and revitalized. So maybe Ball Hawk Nelson is sitting on an opportunity to play in this game. Let's hope so. Hey, let's go to the Downward Dog phone line here in our remaining minutes today. Thank you for responding to the open line invitation. John is up first. Mike is on deck. John, good afternoon.
Hey, Mike, John. This is John from Tigard, man.
So, hey, John. Good to hear from you.
So good for you, too. Yeah, so, Mike, I always say this. So Andrew Roderick is my youngest son that you worked with on the Knights this last summer.
Oh, yeah. Great kid. Thank you.
Oh, he is, yeah, and he does the video for does game practice video for the football team.
Yes, so, he does. I see him around. You went on one of the road trips, too. I can't remember which one, but it was good to see him. Maybe Boise State? Did he go to Boise State?
Air Force.
Yeah, I knew he was one of the late trips, but good young man. Good job, John.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. We went to that one, too, so okay. We loved it, man. So we were cheering you on as the GOAT going down the ramp.
Was that you? I mean, I've heard that once in my life, so you were the one. Thank you so much.
That was me and my wife.
Thank you.
Hey, I sent in a text the other day about having Petros on the show, so just kind of wanted to provide some context to it. So I listen to the Petro Money Show. I work remotely, so I listen to the Petro Money Show at 3 o'clock. Now, I love Petros Papadakis back to when he did Pros versus Joes, and it was December last year. He talked, it was right before he was making picks, and he was talking about the Washington State Syracuse game, the Holiday Bowl. So, and then he was talking about, you know, the lawsuit, and he mentioned being in Corvallis because I think he did the San Diego State game in 2023 when we played San Diego State at home. And he mentioned that you guys, he was on the show and you guys had talked about the lawsuit. And then he said he was getting texts from people about the lawsuit. People were mad because he didn't know anything about it. And he goes, now I think they're all mad at me because they'd never called me back.
Man, no way.
Now, Petros. Yeah. So, okay.
And I think, you know, I mean, I think a little bit of it was tongue-in-cheek. But it was just, I got a kick out of that. And I'm sorry it's taken so long for me to get back to you guys. But
I'm glad you told us.
That's a good reminder. Yeah. I remember that conversation. I remember we asked Petros, and it was clear, like a little bit like Big Jim Wilson. Jim's getting ready for the next game, and he's almost in the mode of, look, tell me when it's over. Tell me when we get settled in. Yeah. I'm ready to call games anytime, any place, anywhere. Just tell me who we're playing, where, and when. But don't get me caught up in, well, Memphis versus UNLV. I mean, you know, and I think Petro and how much money are we going to have in the war chest and all of those types of things. Petros had not at that point made any kind of dive into that world, and yet we asked him about it. So that's on us, not him, for not having a thought about it. So we'll reach out to him again. I do think his tongue was probably in cheek when he said they're mad at me.
Oh, yeah.
He knows we're not mad at him.
No, the guy is just, I mean, they're showing Matt Smith is saying.
Yes.
Funny. It's LA. I'm a San Francisco Giants fan. I do not like the Dodgers, but I listen to it anyway. I listen to the show. They're all the Dodgers.
Yeah. How long have you been a Giants fan, John? When did your fandom kick in?
My first game, I was 10 years old, 11 years old. I'm 60, so I graduated high school in 82, and I graduated from Oregon State in 94. I was an older than average student at Oregon State. So, but I was about 1977, I went to my first Giants game. Candlestick Park. My grandma lived in Santa Rosa. My dad grew up part of his life down there. We grew up in 10 Mile, Oregon, outside Winston. And so we went down there, and they were playing the Padres, and Dave Winfield was a rookie. And Willie McCovey hit a pinch hit home run that won the game for him. So
yes,
then I was hooked. I was hooked after that.
So McCovey was an all-time great, wasn't he? So you did. He your favorite player growing up?
Yeah, pretty much. I batted right-handed, but I pretended like I batted. I had a William McCovey wooden bat that my dad had bought for me. It had his name engraved in it, and McCovey. He was the guy, man. He was Joe Cool. So yeah, so I've been a Giants fan ever since then. So we go to spring training, we catch a couple games. We actually went down a few years ago when Adley was playing. Andrew actually trained with Matt Fishback and with Randy Rushman a little bit when he played baseball in high school. So you can ask him about that too.
Yeah,
we didn't know that. We actually hooked up with Randy and Matt Fishback. We were down there too. So
when you call Andrew, see, I knew him as Andrew, but you call him Andy. That's a dad's prerogative. Is he okay with being called Andy? Because I've only known him as Andrew.
Oh no, I call him Andrew. I might have misspoke there. No, I call him Andrew. No.
Oh, you do.
He's Andrew. Oh, he's Andrew.
Okay.
Yeah. Melissa, my wife, she calls him Drew every once in a while.
Okay.
John,
he's always Andrew. We wanted the best man at my wedding. I've known since first grade. His name is Andy, so he always jokes around that we named Andrew after him.
So, John, you know who else is from 10 Mile, Oregon?
Oh, yeah, Troy Polamalu.
There you go.
Yeah.
Pretty good player,
too.
Actually, the story is I grew up with Joe Polamalu, who played at Oregon State. You know, he coached. He goes Cottage Grove. Joe played for Pettibone down there. Not Pettibone. He played for
Dave Craigthorpe or
Craigthorpe. He played for Craigthorpe.
Was he Troy's dad or uncle, or who was he to Troy?
He was. Troy was Joe's cousin, and then Salu Palomalu was Troy's uncle. So Salu, I got to answer your story. So Salu was Joe played Pee Wee baseball with us. He was like 3 or 4 years old, or younger than us. But my sister babysat Joe and his sister and his brother. Excuse me. And then, so Salu was like a 6'3". He fluctuated between 280, 330, you know, small guy, or Hawaiian guy, Islander. Yeah. So he was actually getting in an argument with Mr. Narkowitz, and I was in the seventh grade, and I was the umpire, so I was standing in between these two guys, this 280-pound Islander, and Mr. Narkowitz was about 6'3", and about 240, 250. So I looked over at my dad and asked my dad, what do I do? They were arguing a call. So Troy, I've watched Troy play. He went to my high school, graduated high school, my high school. He went to the same grade school I went to. Had some of the same teachers I had too. So
that's cool.
Watched Troy play football, basketball, and baseball down at Douglas. Watch games.
Hey, so. John, thank you for the reminder on Petros. That piques our interest again,
absolutely.
And we're going to reach out to an old friend here soon and see what he makes of the whole strange world we're in. But he's a great one, a big soul of a man, and we love him. And thank you for kind of putting us on his path.
And I got to say, I love you guys too, man. You guys are part of my day. I listen to you guys every day, and if I miss it, then I'm going to be out of town next week. I got to fly out to Martinez, California, down to Oakland. So I'm going to try to catch you guys on some streaming. But I love listening to you guys every day. And John, I listen to you at the Clue Morning Update every morning when I'm down at the gym too, man.
Oh, that's
Thank
great.
You so much,
thanks, John.
Great to talk to you, sir. John joining us.
John,
his son's a great kid, Andrew. Let's go to Mike next on the Downward Dog phone line. Thank you, Mike, for the call. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Mike, I love that baseball analogy. On deck, I got Kenai, Lily, and Daisy, and all my five black lab pups in the hall, and my wife, Chris, and all five of us and the two of us are headed for the prize. Round Rock in Arlington.
Oh, good for you. You're doing the trifecta as well. I'm happy for you, Mike. That's great.
Well, we're going to go, you know, Chris retired from pharmacy, so she's done. I do my dogs once in a while, but, you know, we're going to take the RV and we're going to go all the way down. And the only problem is going to be is making it from Surprise to Round Rock. I might have to do some extra driving to get there on time. But I was going to say, you know, you were talking about Reader. Cannon, a few years ago, I was standing, when he was a freshman, I was standing in the outfield. I just walked in, and I was looking at the home plate from 85, 86, is, you know, light years away. And I was like, just standing there, still felt the same, but everything looked different. And he was sitting on a bench over there, and I went over and talked to him. And he was a very polite young man.
Yes.
Smart. Going to business school. You know, and he said, he was a freshman. He was like a little discouraged about, you know, well, not discouraged, but, you know, he was antsy to get in playing time. And, you know, I got a chance to meet, you know, we talk to the parents a lot, and the parents are super nice, good quality people. But, you know, the young man, I said, you know, you're going to get a degree. you got a scholarship. Mm-hmm. And then you get to play Beaver baseball. I mean, there's nothing better than that. And
right.
It's like, he was very appreciative, and you know, when we go down to the warm states to go watch baseball, you know, the most fun for us is, you know, my wife is my scorekeeper all my life as a coach, and we're basically, you get to hang out with baseball purists
for
you know, several weeks, and man, I tell you, it's just not any better than that. You sit with parents, you talk, and others that are around, and you know, I tell you, you know this. Oregon State, Beaver Nation, parents, players, ex-players, all that. I just don't know another team that's more purist, more knowledgeable, more into baseball, you know, for so many years. And, you know, this is going to be a blast. It'll be really fun to be able to go down there and just hang out and watch great baseball at some really, really great facilities.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, my schedule has never really allowed me to do it, but I live vicariously through you and through Jeff and others who get to experience that, and Josh and, And Rich Burke will be calling the games from down there here early in the year. John's been down. I mean, I can feel the warmth and the love and the joy for the new season coming through the radio. I'm happy for you, Mike. I'm glad you'll get to be there amongst the great fan base of the Beavers and their program. Thank you for the call, sir. Have a great time down there.
Hey, thank you guys so much. I'll give you guys a call back.
Please do.
When the morning warm and sunny,
yes,
and send some good vibes your way. I'll just call back and send some of that love your way. And then,
please do.
You know, good luck. You know, Coach Hinkle, I love that guy to death. And one thing I'm a little bit discouraged by is somebody hasn't come up with some money to help buy another player. I'm not saying the guys that can watch and practice, they're great, but you know, it just kind of amazes me that seems like everybody, we're playing basketball right now, everybody has a big, like a really big. We seem to be battling the biggest of the bigs this year.
Well, yeah, you know, but battling and competing, and I think there's good times ahead for the Beavers and the rest of this regular season and what could unfold in Vegas, too. Good to hear from you, Mike. Have a great trip down there. Thanks for the call. Let's take our final break. I looked up Willie McCovey in honor of John and his love for Big Mac, for Willie Mac, number 44. As much as I love, and you've heard me occasionally, John, say that I kind of think Willie Mays was pretty good, but McCovey is the one who struck absolute fear into my soul. And I would say to Dad, my dad at ball game, Dad, McCovey's on deck. What are we going to do? We better get out of this inning, because if we don't, McCovey's coming up. I mean, he struck fear with the way he'd pump the bat back and forth in the box and just his presence in the box. And he hit the 3-run homer on June 17th, 1966, off Don Sutton, to give Gaylord Perry and the Giants a 4-1 win, and I was there, my first baseball game ever, and cried so much of the way home. My dad saying, "Son, we'll come to another game someday." But Dad, McCovey just created fear in my 7-year-old soul when he hit that 3-run home run, and it seemed like he just always hit the ball hard and over the fence. But Willie Mays, the scout, and so Geddy Lee doesn't have an autographed baseball from McCovey, but he does from Willie Mays. 72 Stories, the Geddy Lee book, in Leo DeRocher's book. And I can't believe Geddy wrote all of this. He must have had some sort of ghostwriter helping him write these stories with Daniel Rickler. So Daniel Rickler is probably doing the heavy lifting here, and the writing would be my guess. But Geddy Lee's book says the Giant scout Eddie Montague discovered Willie, reporting to Leo. "Leo, they got a kid playing center field, practically barefooted, that's the best baseball player I ever saw. You better send somebody down there with a barrel full of money and grab this kid." And the Giants did do that, and DeRocher said, inventing a term that we've used ever since, DeRocher said, "I'll look you right in the eye and tell you that Willie was better. He could do the 5 things you have to do to be a superstar. Hit with power, run, throw, and field." And he had the other magic ingredient that turns a superstar into a super superstar. Leo anticipating the use of the word super in the modern era. A super superstar, charisma. He lit up a room when he came in. He was a joy to be around.
Talking about Mays and McCovey.
Talking about Mays.
Okay.
I just wanted to get a little Geddy Lee meditation in here on his 72 stories, compliments of the nuclear engineer professor Todd Palmer at Oregon State, who gifted me this book earlier today. Let's break, wrap up the show for today on the Joe Beaver Show. It can't. What do you mean off air? It doesn't want me to address it on air?
I don't know. I just.
I don't think. Says. Yeah, I think he may be thinking. You know, Orlando did hit 46 one year. I'm just answering a text off the University Honda text line. I'm not sure they had 3 guys hit 40 in the same year. I don't believe so. The Braves did, I think, one year. Hank Darrell and somebody else? Davey Johnson. Yeah. Okay. The Braves had 3 guys hit 40 in a season. I think that's the only time that's happened.
Davey Johnson, he of
Davey
the Mets?
Davey Johnson.
The Mets guy from the 80s?
Yes, hit 43. His home run arc, we used to play the home run game. We knew how to have a good time in college. You know, let's play the home run game. How does that work? Well, I'm going to read off 6 seasons in a row of numbers. 17, 19, 14, 43, 11, 9, 11. Oh, well, that's got to be Davey Johnson then. You know, that's the home run game.
Would your friends have gotten that?
Well, the friends that I traveled with, I made sure they're the right kind of fellow travelers. Uh-oh, don't get me in trouble, Senator. Anyway, it was a I travel with fellows in the baseball sort of trivia baseball world. Yeah. And the home run game, we'd play and read off home run. Oh, that's Eddie Matthews. That's Frank Howard. That's Rocky Colavito. See, we knew how to have a good time. You can talk about all the fun you had in college. That's what I was doing. Now, there's nothing more fun than that, the home run game. But you play the home run game with Davey Johnson, and it is kind of like that. His year-by-year homers, 11, 13, 15, 16, 43.
Was he roided up? What
happened? I don't know. But I think it's the three guys, Darrell Evans, Hank, and Davey, are the only three guys that ever hit 40 in the same season for the same team, 1973, I believe. Now, we get a question about the Giants and their 340 guys. I don't think in the same year, but certainly Orlando hitting 46 one year. Mays had 40s and 50s, and Willie McCovey. That would be my guess that he's driving at in the 60s, early 60s for Orlando before he got traded. But I don't think they did it in the—I know they didn't do it in the same year, but it's the question's a good one.
Well, I'm not going to argue.
Okay.
Whatever you say. You can make it up.
43. I mean, even Maris, you play the home run game with Maris, it's that way.
Yeah, well, wasn't it that way with everyone, until Ruth started hitting him?
Well, that's a good question. I mean,
teens, 19,
yeah, well,
18.
I mean, you know, Frank home run Baker, why? Well, because he hit two home runs in a World Series game once.
Yeah.
That made him Frank home run Baker.
Yeah.
Now, I did see, back to closing where we started, musical geniuses and their love for baseball. Geddy Lee in his collection. 72 stories.
Go home and listen to Rush.
Yeah, Bob Dylan. Go to Montebello. I will. I've been listening to Rush a little bit more. Bob Dylan said of his friend Lou Levy, who said, write a song about baseball players. You know, that whole thing we talked about last week. He said that his friend Lou, not only exit velo, but Lou hated the home run. He said, people get all excited about home run balls. He said, when I see a home run, I want my money back.
I'm almost the same way.
Now, that's Lou Levy anticipating exit velo off Paul Wehner's bat. He's more impressed with a 150-mile-an-hour line drive that he claimed Paul Wehner could hit, as opposed to just everybody stepping up and hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And I tend to agree with Lou Levy on that, too. But go, man, go on the circuit clouts. Hey, we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.